All right, everyone. We are live once again right here on Free for All on a Thursday night with some interesting talk tonight and also some very interesting guest. We'll introduce the gentleman in 1 second, but let's kick things off by saying hello to my co-host and favorite guy out west, Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm just proud to have Utah regarded as part of the West, partner. I'm very excited. I've been wanting to talk about the Texas legislation for a while now, yes. And you snagged us a delicious guest in the Liberty Movement who, and I'm not just talking about his looks. I am talking about his looks, but also fantastic ideology and tastes. Ted Brown, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? Who are you? What role do you play out there in Texas?
Well, gentlemen, thanks for having me on. And, last year I was the Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senator from Texas in 2024 against Ted Cruz and Colin Allred, and I was the better Ted in that race, which was my my slogan in that one. But for the Texas Party, I'm the candidate coordinator, recruiting other candidates here in Texas, and a member of the State Executive Committee and the Vice Chairman in Travis County, which is Austin. So, but I've been active in the party my whole adult life since I was a college freshman 40-some years ago, and I'm a lifer, and I'm very devoted to the libertarian cause and the cause of liberty. So I am still out there doing what I can.
Well, that's excellent to hear, and of course we're very happy to have you on the show. And as Hody alluded to, the reason we invited you tonight is there's been some interesting stuff. I was just about to say weird stuff, but I'm going to refrain from saying that. I'm going to say interesting stuff, both taking place and attempted to take place in the great state of Texas, legislatively speaking. And I know Hody, as I've always said, he's the reader of this duo. I don't read. I'm like Trump. Show me pictures, you know. But Hody actually reads. So he kind of took a look at all the bills that are being proposed, some of that are passed, some of that are still in legislation or in the voting process. And we want to get your feedback on them because a lot of it is a little disturbing, to be honest with you. Texas, of course, can be known for its conservative stances. But at times, I think you would agree, Ted, that we can also count on some Texans to have some nice libertarian streaks about them. It's just a matter of herding all of them and making them effective libertarian positions. So, Hody, why don't we start off? I think the first thing we want to talk about, just to get Ted's opinion on, is the that Texas is trying to ban hemp-derived THC products. And they're kind of threatening the industry that's sort of rising up in Texas there and also patient access to those products. Hody, why don't you tell us a little bit about that legislation?
Right. This one, I do know the number on that one. That's SB3.
Okay.
And, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who's a Republican, who's been in office for quite a long time and is in charge of the state Senate, it was his biggest legislative priority. He is like some reefer madness, crazy conservative from the 1930s or something. And
right.
He also gets a lot of contributions from the alcohol industry. So his goal is to ban cannabis, really. But he certainly was going after these THC products like gummies and vapes and all the miscellaneous non-smoking cannabis products. And most of these derivatives have been legal. It was kind of accidental that they made them legal back around 2018 or 2019, but it's worked quite well. There's a lot of retail stores, a very, very low percentage THC, but it's still, you know, it still is a THC that can get you a little bit, has some effect for people. That's why they like it, like for various health conditions, and veterans like it, and they're but Patrick was just being a real showman about it. He went to these stores, there's hundreds of stores in Texas with over 50,000 people working in this business. It's a big industry, and he was making a big show about they don't ask for ID, and kids can buy these gummy bears, and you know, of course, they did ask him for ID, and he's 75 years old. But the point is, though, I'm sure they're not selling to kids in there. And as you know, the libertarian position is that adults should be able to put any substance in their body that they want, And this is a particularly mild one compared to a lot of the substances people like to put in their bodies. But still, this is a big deal. There's like hundreds of thousands of people have already signed petitions for Governor Abbott to veto this bill. And no one knows. He's not said a word about it. We have no idea what he's going to do on this bill. Often he expresses his opinion right out of the gate. But Abbott does not have a reputation as one of these drug warrior reefer madness guys like Patrick does over the years. And hopefully he'll listen to the hundreds of thousands of people like veterans and business people and a lot of people that want him to veto this bill. So we'll see. That's like that's really a major one for the cannabis industry and for libertarians. I mean, that's one that we've been certainly active in lobbying on that one also.
Yeah, and there's multiple fronts where this kind of shoots you in the foot because it's $8 billion a year in revenue. Mm-hmm. It's 50,000 jobs. And the number of people who are using it medically, whether it's to treat epilepsy, to stop them from having seizures, to treat PTSD, to treat chronic pain, that there are no exceptions for these people under this bill. And maybe most horrifyingly of all, and I just had to research Texas legislature to understand this, if Abbott does nothing, it becomes a law on June 23rd. It does not require the governor's signature on this one.
That's correct. That's correct. It's the same as in nationally. If the governor just lets the bill book become law without his signature, which is a way to say, well, I didn't sign the bill, but he still, you know, let it go through. But now there is one thing. There is another bill, though, which is a little bit better. And this is like there is a medical marijuana program in Texas, but very few people are eligible for it, like 30,000 people in the whole state, because they've limited it to like three or four different conditions, unlike in other states. And they actually have passed a bill. And I think that one is I think it's a House Bill 46. I'm not sure, though. And that's one where they are extending that program to like chronic pain patients and a few other conditions that that's good. That's good. And then more outlets will be available to prescribe the medical marijuana. So that's a benefit. That's a good one. And hopefully that one will go through. But it's just not really much. It's really not much when you think about the large hemp industry, the THC industry, that's going to get wiped out if HB3 it goes through.
Yeah, and Ted, I mean, we saw this, I think at one point we had Martha Bueno on, who was an activist, and I think she owned a company in Florida, and how they essentially destroyed her business in Florida by turning against this. In Texas, give me the sort of the temperature of the state, of the people. Are the people pulling for this, or are they complaining that there's, you know, too many gummy stores opening up in their neighborhoods or in their backyards? Because Texas, to me, it seems to be a spectrum of people, right? Like, I would think Austin would be more college kids oriented, you know, college town. They might be more tolerant to something like that, where, say, different parts of Texas, more conservative, for lack of a better term, maybe more religious or family oriented. I'm not sure how to phrase it. So how do you read the room on this issue? Do you think that Texans, the citizens, are behind Patrick? Is it 50-50? What's your sense of that?
Oh, they're against him. I mean, even Republicans. I mean, it's like the polls show that over 60% of Texans want pretty much full decriminalization. They want even recreational use of marijuana. They don't even want any of these kind of regulations. And the remainder want some regulations. It's a very tiny, tiny number of Texans, like probably less than 20%, that want a complete ban on THC and cannabis products. So it's not even a something that would be damaging politically for all the Republicans to say, yep, let's just give the people what they want on this one. And it's truly, in some ways, corrupt because of the alcohol lobby is giving a lot of contributions to Patrick and probably some other Republicans as well, because they don't want the THC and industry to be bigger, even though they, of course, could go into the THC industry if they wanted to, which is crazy. They, you know, that's the free market for you, just like I think some tobacco companies have done that in other states after they started complaining about it originally. So the free market is the way to go, and Republicans are supposed to think that way, but sometimes they just get their panties in a bunch or something, or they watch Reefer Madness or some crazy thing. And they are against people's freedoms. So, and a number of other bills that way too, but this is like the biggest one because there's such a large industry has developed on this.
Right, right. And to your point, like the Libertarian Party since its inception has been out front on this, right? Saying,
oh yeah.
And to something that Hody is always saying, like, this is where the Libertarian Party at its best as an opposition party, as a party of principle, stuck to its guns. And then, yes, it may have taken 25, 30 years, but now it seems to me the default position is why not let people have access to marijuana, to gummies, to THC, even those who are against it for themselves. Like I keep saying, I'm straight edge. I don't drink, smoke, or anything like that, but I have no problem if someone wants to partake. You know, you know, they're not harming me, right? And the Libertarian Party was out front on this and stuck to its guns. And, you know, now we've shifted this conversation. So as a final thing, if you're kind of telling me most of Texans don't want to see this sort of thing happen, politically it's maybe not a game winner for Patrick. The only thing that's left is, without me making any accusations, I'm just following the syllogistic reasoning here, somebody is putting money in his pocket. Is there any other political advantage that you can see to Patrick saying, like, hey, I'm gung-ho behind this because I'm going to capture the blank vote, you know, or something like that?
No, this might actually be a case where, while there is the money involved, I think even without the money, he might be doing the same thing. He's just a true believer against substances like that, against people being able to alter their consciousness. I think he's a recovered alcoholic, and I think he just wants to, impose his will on everybody else, just like a lot of the right-wingers and a lot of the people on his team want to do. And it's not just on this issue. You probably are going to bring up some other issues that they were talking about. They just they don't believe in limited government like they say. They believe in getting into people's homes and bedrooms and pocketbooks as well. I mean, it's like these guys are not what they are purported to be. You know, they always like campaign like libertarians and they govern like who knows what, like
Republicans. Let's face it. Yeah. They believe in limited government as long as it's limited to their point of view. Hody, what's next that you want to talk about with Ted?
Yeah, I suspect this one may be slightly more popular among Texans, but maybe not with libertarians. And I'm going to combine a couple bills here, but the anti-DEI and LGBTQ rights and education specifically. We have Senate Bill 12, which prohibits not only public but also private schools from implementing DEI policies. This would include if you wanted to, say, have a Muslim teacher teach about Islam, that they would no longer be able to consider that for their hiring purposes. Student clubs that are for LGBTQ, even if it is not hosted by the school and is simply purely a student club that the students wanted to organize, banned. Fines for teachers if they even accidentally use a student's preferred pronoun as opposed to what's on their birth certificate. And then we've got Senate Bill 37, which is when we can't control K through 12, we'll go ahead and get higher education by appointing a state-approved board to oversee academic content, particularly concerning DEI topics, and these regents will have control over the curricula, even if we're not talking, even if it's just DEI and LGBTQ+, establishing a board that gets to oversee academic curricula seems to go well beyond the scope here. What's your assessment of these? I think I know where you stand as a libertarian, but as somebody from Texas also, what's your feeling on these?
Oh, totally against these. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre. And especially if they start trying to go after private schools and private businesses on these issues, who can certainly do whatever they want and hire whoever they want and implement whatever kind of policies they want. But even when you're talking about government-funded public institutions, I mean, when you say this DEI, this is some kind of bugaboo. I mean, first of all, libertarians don't please anyone. Like me personally, I'm in favor of D and I, but not E, for example. I certainly believe in diversity and inclusion. Everybody should be welcome to apply for jobs and study whatever they want, and no matter what their race, religion, creed, and all. But you can't have equity because that you can't have any guaranteed results, though. That's a big difference. So I think E should be pulled out of DEI. But I think when when Republicans are talking about it, they aren't very like technical or specific about what it means. What they're implying is whenever they just throw it out like DEI means didn't earn it or some crazy thing like that, what they really want is just white people and straight white people to be, and men mostly, to be in all the jobs is what it seems like. That's what a lot of these people are extremely religious. They're backed by these right-wing oil billionaires that are very religious, and they just want to have – a lot of them are Christian nationalists even, so they are wanting to impose their religious views on people. And so it's not only the people might think, oh, well, they just don't have all this gay influence in the schools. Well, yeah, that's true. They don't. But it's a lot more than that. It's like they don't want gays and lesbians – and transgendered people, but they also don't seem to want black people and women and, you know, anybody from minority groups. They don't even want them talked about or mentioned. This critical race theory is another one they bring up, which is crazy. And they use that to say, well, you can't even discuss that there was some nasty Texans back in the civil rights era that didn't want black people to have the right to vote. And they were, acting rather miserably. They don't want their kids to learn what their grandparents did back then when they were trying to stop black people from entering schools at all. So I think that and I'm not sure if every libertarian is going to agree with me on this, but my personal point of view is I think this is just like just an attitude that's like taking us back into the dark ages. And frankly, they should just let school districts teach what they want to teach and let certainly private schools do what they're going to do, and colleges for sure. They shouldn't be controlling any curriculum in the colleges. That's ridiculous. If we trust teachers to teach, they should be allowed to teach, professors especially, at the college level. School clubs, I mean, I can see them saying that, parents would have to sign off on their kid joining a club or something, but they certainly shouldn't be banning any clubs. Kids should be able to start their clubs for whatever subject matter they want. It's a matter of free speech and all, so. Definitely, these bills are just no good, and you can be sure that the governor is going to sign all of them, though, because that's part of the Republican priorities, and they all seem to be on the same page on that.
And like you said, and like I'm sure Hody agrees with me, the term DEI, CRT, the critical race theories and all that, they're used as catch-all, like you said, fear-mongering almost, right? Because I doubt that when you say DEI and you really dig into it, how many of the people who object to it have a very precise understanding of what they're objecting to? Like, that's the step one, right? Like, what are you actually objecting to? Are you objecting to history that paints America in a negative light? Is that what you're objecting to? Certainly you're not objecting to math that came from non-whites, to your point, because then most of math would disappear, right? Half the science would disappear. So I think it's more these soft subjects that they object to. And my point has always been, like, I look very clearly, my personal experience is growing up in New York 50 years ago, my parents didn't like what was being taught in the public schools, but their first reaction wasn't to say, shut down the school, change the school. They pulled me out of public school and put me in a parochial school that they believed in what those folks were teaching in that particular school. So tell me now, why isn't it, you think, as a libertarian, and you're talking to folks, you're trying to get them to support you, to represent them in the U.S. Senate, why do you think the first reaction nowadays among people is to say, I have a societal beef, therefore the government needs to take care of it for me? As opposed to, well, look, I don't agree with what they're doing in this public school, either justified or unjustified. Why don't I pull my kid out and put them in a charter school? Why don't I put them in a private school? Why don't I homeschool them the way that I best see fit? Why do you think and listen, it confuses me because Texans have a well-earned reputation for independence, right? Right? You can't tell Texans two things, right, if they don't want to hear them. So why do you think this knee-jerk reaction to let's go to big government, let's go to Governor Abbott, we need the state house to tell us how to educate our kids and make sure, by the way, that they're protected from all this, what we think is garbage, this DEI, this CRT. Why do you think that's that knee-jerk reaction?
Right. Interestingly enough, a lot of people do homeschool their kids, or a lot of people do try to get their kids into private schools, religious schools, et cetera. In fact, that was one of the big issues about school choice, about a voucher system, educational savings accounts and all that Governor Abbott's been pushing for years, and it finally passed. There's actually going to be a program for parents to get a state fee to, like, partially cover private school tuition and such. And I'm not sure about all the exact details of it, but it's probably a little bit better than not – it's good versus not good. I'm not sure it would be the exact way libertarians would write a bill like that, but obviously we favor school choice and parents making those choices for their themselves and their kids. But, yeah, it's a matter of even if they're taking their kids out of school, they still want to – they just don't want this these certain influences in society they think that are dangerous. They it's a very religious attitude, I think. And, of course, some of them, it's either religious or sometimes political. They just watch Fox News all the time, or they listen to some of these right-wing Republican politicians and commentators, and they get whipped up into a frenzy about some of these issues that are, like, so insignificant in the scheme of things. Then they think that, like, drag queens are coming for their kids, their kids are going to be turned trans at school, and, you know, there's all these crazy things that, you know, somewhere, sometime, something like that might have happened one time, or, you know, but as for something that regularly happens in society and in schools and in libraries and all this, it's insane. It doesn't. You know, they don't want drag queen story hours, so they want to ban those. But 99% of the population has never even seen a drag queen, probably won't. And trans people are about 0.5% of the population. It's a very small number of people, though they get more media attention than any group of that size ever has gotten in the world, you know. So it's just they have either good or bad PR, however you might want to consider it. But they, in general, they gay people, lesbians, trans people, they're not a threat to your kids. And, you know, it just makes me shake my head. And, you know, there are big issues out there. Your lives are being ruined by government and the economy's going down the toilet. There could be World War III and you're worried about, you know, what bathroom somebody's using. Come on. It's crazy.
Right. Even though we can't afford the bathrooms pretty soon due to the debt, we're worried more about – yeah, you're right. Before I turn it back to Hody for a second, let me just remind the folks out there, we are live. We are taking questions. So I see we have a couple of folks watching us live. If you have any questions for Ted or for Big John or Hody, feel free to hit us up. If you're a resident of the great state of Texas who thinks we're talking smack and garbage, give us your perspective. Let us know why you think we're wrong on these issues. We'll be happy to discuss them with you right here in the chat. Hody, why don't you take the next issue with Ted?
Sure. Speaking of things that taxpayers kind of can't afford, how about mandatory copies of the Ten Commandments and putting them into every classroom in Texas? This is Senate Bill 10, requiring that all public schools display the Ten Commandments. If this bill sounds familiar, they tried it in Louisiana just last year, and it was struck down under Stone v. Graham, 1980 U.S. Supreme Court case that and that was out of Kentucky, but mandated that said mandating the Ten Commandments in a public school system is unconstitutional, violates the Establishment Clause, and then there's obviously issues with the separation of church and state. I am a Christian. I am a proud Christian. I am head of the Love First Christians. I love my faith. I'm not embarrassed of it. I think the last thing I want is for the state to be dictating my faith and for anything that happens in the public schools to look like it is happening with the approval of my faith. I have obvious issues with that. Obviously, separation of church and state issues because, hey, this is going to be a taxpayer-funded initiative to produce a religious document. Students there are compelled to go to schools and to view religious texts. Again, that's another one we have a Supreme Court case ruling for that is also unconstitutional. It doesn't look like that this will survive even if it passes, but it's another one that has passed and will come into law on June 23rd unless Abbott blocks it. What are your theories on it, Ted?
Oh, yeah, it's he'll sign that bill probably. I mean, they have the Ten Commandments on a statue outside of the state capitol. And they wanted to put them up in the Capitol as well. I mean, the legislators violate most of those commandments anyway on a regular basis. And now they want to put them in the school just to be like virtue signaling to the religious community. And I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with following the Ten Commandments, but they're certainly not putting up any kind of doctrine from any other religion. And they'd be shocked if someone tried to put like some verses from the Quran or something from the Buddhist or Hindu texts or something up there. You know, they say, oh my God, that's blasphemy or whatever the case may be. They're just virtue signaling on this thing. And it very well could be struck down by the courts. Oh, it's interesting. It's kind of telling. My own state representative, James Tallarico, who's a liberal Democrat, is always taunting the Republicans. And there's a lot of clips of him doing that because he's studying to be a pastor. And he's a liberal Christian. And he knows the Bible backwards and forwards more than most of them. And he's like baiting all of these religious conservatives that don't know whit about the Bible. It's like they claim to be biblical and they don't even know what's in there. And he proposed an amendment to put the Constitution up on the wall next to the Ten Commandments. They voted that down. I mean, that would be great to have the Constitution up there.
Put the Bill of Rights right next to the Ten Amendments, right next to the Ten Commandments. Seems like an opportunity for perfect symmetry, and I guess they're not going to jump on that.
No, I thought that they just don't want to give the Democrats any kind of a win on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we forbid them from bearing false witness in practicality as opposed to just virtue signaling it? Like,
oh my
God. Like Ted said, we'd have to replace the whole legislature.
Oh, and exactly. Yeah, it's like there was a movie, Ricky Gervais had this movie years ago called The Invention of Lying. It was something like that. Nobody ever lied before, and then he finally discovered it, and everybody, no one ever heard of anybody not telling the truth, so they didn't understand that he was actually making stuff up. So if we went back to, like, nobody being able to lie, it'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I what was that? Like, I remember that movie. It was like he walked up to some random, like, 10 out of 10 woman on the street and said, unless you sleep with me immediately, we're all going to perish. And she went, well, I do find you repulsive, but, you know, to save the world, of course I will. Because, to your point, they didn't know that anyone could lie in that movie. So, yeah, it was
exactly.
I do remember that one. It's a hilarious movie. And, Hody, are you saying that you don't feel the state is an accurate and worthy representative of your faith? Is that what you're trying to – are you implying that or saying that outright?
I will go ahead and say that outright and put it in neon letters. I really – the separation of church and state is often discussed in terms of protecting the state from the church. And if we look at a lot of the origins of this throughout history, protecting the church from the state is about equally as important. People need these cultural, we need cultural healing in our lives, and that's something that churches can provide. And if the state gets to be able to kind of shape how that faith heals people, they can suddenly use it to harm people and getting them to believe terrible things. There's some great books about this. I'll recommend one real quick because I feel like I recommend like at least one book every show, so I have to.
You do, yeah, yeah.
But The Other Evangelicals, is it about in America, it's recent history, it's an intentional orchestrated event by conservatives to co-opt the Christian movement when it was obvious that the Bible wouldn't support their plans, how they did it. It's very specific. You get a lot of not only stories, but a lot of quotes, and they're very explicit. Like, this was not something that, like, this isn't like a theory that they co-opted the church. Like, it's something they definitely want to do. So the more they erode away the separation of church and state, the worse things are for believers and the better things are for the state.
Yeah, I agree with you. And It's interesting to me that the type of religious intolerance that you see is always predicated, like you keep hearing, like, well, you know, Texas needs to stay a Christian state because we have this Muslim influx now in Texas, right? They're building mosques and they're buying land to build mosques. And, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen? You know, and there's always that as much as well, I can't even say it's exclusive to either of the duopoly. Both of them live off the fear-mongering, right?
Oh, like, yeah, exactly.
So I was just about to say Republicans are ginning that up recently, but that's because they're in power and they need to stay in power, right? So the Democrats, their boogeyman is the Republicans, and right now for the Republicans, the boogeyman is anybody not Republican. So, you know, I could definitely see that cycle continuing.
But they're saying that about this thing about Muslims. There's some report, they're taking over these different communities. They want to have, like, a town around their mosque and things like that. I still think Muslims are a very small part of the nation's population and the Texas population. And certainly I've met Muslims here. And but they have the right to their worship, just like everybody else does. They don't have the right to impose their laws on people in Texas or anywhere else. But as long as they're obeying the laws of Texas, they're not violating anybody else's rights. I mean, they should be left alone to do their thing.
Absolutely. And before we get to the next one, Phil Rain says, three handsome gentlemen. Well, I'll agree with you on that, Phil. Why not? Absolutely. Yeah, we'll all take a moment just to bask in each other's appearances here. Thank you for that comment, Phil. All right. You know, one of the things also, before we get to the next topic on Hody's list, one of the things that was taking place there in Texas was the continued trend in most states, in a lot of states, I should say, of the elimination of third-party access.
Yes.
Ballot access. And, you know, look, I've been a New Yorker my whole life. I still live in New York. And what they did to the Libertarian Party here in New York is absolutely criminal. It's easier for Larry Sharp to get on the ballot in Moscow, literally, than it is for him to get on the ballot in New York.
Exactly. Yeah, New York was one of the – that was really a shocker because that was like the first year, I think, the last couple of elections where they've had no third-party candidates, like in the last 75 years or something. They were their move there was so efficient and effective in getting rid of third parties.
Yeah, and it's troubling because, you know, you keep hearing the nonsense like, stop crying and, you know. But it seems that only libertarians are accused and the Greens and the third party are accused of their whining. But Texas attempted some of that in recent. It didn't pass. But talk to me about that a little bit. Let's talk a little bit libertarian politics, being a member of the LP in Texas. And, you know, and look, there's certain state LPs that I have issue with, obviously. Mm-hmm. So does Hody. People who watch Free For All could probably list those ones out, ones that we take umbrage with. But LP Texas, LP Louisiana, there's a lot of, and I'm sure there's a lot of other great ones that I don't mean to insult by leaving out. But you know, you guys seem to have your acts together. Tell me how the LP Texas is continuing to fight for liberty there. How do you view the state party there pushing ahead and making sure that Texans have options?
Well, I've been involved in the state party here since I've lived in Texas. It's about, I'm in my eighth year here in Texas. And I've been active the whole time since I've been here. And this party is very active. They have like a very large membership, a large number of activists, a lot of people volunteering for every type of activity that comes up. And I've been on the state executive committee, and I've been seeing how active people are, how they're willing to contribute, they're willing to lobby. There's a lot of things that are going on here. And what's really good is the Texas LP is sort of like the bastion for not supporting the Mises Caucus, which has damaged the party in a lot of the country, that they have not taken hold in Texas. A number of their members are on our executive committee, and a lot of them are nice people, but they haven't taken over the party, which is the important thing. And the same is the case in Louisiana, as far as I know. And in fact, Louisiana has some of the best social media messaging of any of the state parties over there in Louisiana. But in Texas, the problem is we used to run a lot of candidates in Texas up through like 2018, for example, because no filing fee was required to run for office in Texas. The Democrats and Republicans have fees that are paid to the parties because the parties have the sponsor the primary elections, even though they're state run primaries. So the filing fees go to the parties. And then they said, hey, libertarians should have to pay filing fees also. And they're very expensive because they really wanted to. It wasn't just they thought it should be fair that libertarians pay them, too. What they wanted to do was stop us from running, and the Green Party as well. even though there's not too many greens here, they didn't want either of the well-known alternative parties to run. And so they passed these high filing fees on us, and we've been suing for the last several years about that, and we keep losing, unfortunately. And then our filing fees don't go to the party. They go to the general fund. So we're like, goes down the rat hole there. And so there was a bill in the recent legislature here to correct that, where we can't get rid of the filing fees, but at least they could be paid to the party for our political activities. And probably our members who are running wouldn't object to them as much as they're coming to the party. But no, the legislature rejected that. They just most Democrats favored it, but not all, and most Republicans opposed, but not all, in just keeping the fees going to the general fund. So our number of candidates has dropped off like 75-80% in the last few years, because some of the fees are expensive, over $3,000 to run for Congress, for example. And mine last year was the biggest, $5,000 to run for U.S. Senator. And so they just don't want libertarians on the ballot for these offices. But we raise money. We have candidates who are willing to pay it themselves in some cases. So we're not going away. But unfortunately, the voters are being harmed by this, because they just don't have choices in a lot of districts. I mean, sometimes we've been the only opposition in a number of districts, and now there's even more unopposed incumbents than ever. And this is, this filing fee issue has led to that happening.
And Ted, do you, this isn't necessarily specific to Texas, but I'd like your opinion, is what do you think it will take to break that sort of grip that the duopoly has on this ballot access? Is it ranked choice voting? Is it getting working its way through the courts? Where do you see it, if at all? You may tell me, hey, John, I don't see this ending in our lifetimes. They're not going to give up power, meaning the Democrats and the Republicans.
It's gotten even worse over the last few years, because the tribal blue versus red fight has gotten even worse, and the country is becoming more divided than ever between those two non-choices, really. And so they're fighting harder and harder against anybody who's outside the duopoly there, who isn't going to support the two major parties. And so the Democrats and Republicans are almost joined together in a lot of places. But it's really more the Republicans, but it is both parties in a lot of places, just don't want the competition. Sometimes we win in court here and there on some minor issues, but overall the Supreme Court just will not take ballot access cases. It's been like 30-some years since they've done that, and they just don't want to hear about it. There have been other cases where different appellate justices saying, two parties are enough, or their prejudices are in there. Two parties are enough. Or then the different states argue, oh, the ballot will be cluttered and it'll confuse the voters if there are all these candidates on the ballot. But it's not all these candidates. Maybe though, instead of one or two candidates, there'll be two or three candidates or four at the most. Nobody's going to get confused by that. What we really do need are alternative voting systems, and libertarians do favor ranked choice voting. It's a really minor change, really, but it does work. Alaska uses it, and Maine uses it, and a lot of cities use it, and it works just fine. People aren't confused by it, but Republicans don't seem to understand it. The odds are they're still going to get a Republican, but they want to decide which Republican. They don't want the voters to, maybe get the wrong Republican by ranking the candidates and then, not having first pass the post. So they are the ones that all across the country are trying to ban ranked choice voting.
Now, and you're right, and it does, yeah. To your point, nobody wants to accidentally let another Massey or Rand Paul or, yeah. Anybody else like that in there, because at times, as we're seeing, all it takes is one or two, and in a very polarized political mm-hmm. climate, hey, look, one libertarian in the Senate is going to decide a lot of stuff. What I mean? If you had one libertarian in the Senate right now, imagine how much leverage that one libertarian could extract. Exactly. From either party, unlike the former leadership of the LP. Mm-hmm. I don't view it as necessarily always cutting a deal with the Republicans, right?
No,
I mean,
not
if,
at all.
If you're going to adapt that strategy, if you're going to adopt that strategy, it's like why aren't you going to the Democrats as well and saying this close race, what can you offer me? But, you know, so their intentions are also belied by who they decide they're going to embrace, you know.
But
think about that, you know, and in some cases, had you ranked choice vote, hey, look, what Chase Oliver did in Georgia, throwing that whole Senate race into chaos with his 2%. It's something to consider. Hody, what do you think? Does the Libertarian Party have a better shot going for referendums that change the voting systems, or do you feel pursuing like legal remedy is that more likely to yield results in the future?
That's a really tough question. I think politics is downstream from culture. So whenever I am confronted with do we change the law or do we change the culture, I'm going to choose culture every time. That I think we got to get at what the underlying issues are. I think Ted hit the nail on the head with this. Like, ranked choice voting, like, if we're not changing the systems and the underlying systems, we're just not going to succeed in the system. What's funny is you asked him, Big John, this was actually my last question specifically on the list. But it's what's happened in Texas against the third parties is unreal. The Green Party's going through it too. They've gone from the Green Party and Libertarian Party had 101 total candidates in 2018. That's down to 29 between the two parties last year. And this is not a case of either of the two losing substantial numbers of members. This is entirely to do. In fact, the LP Texas is one of the few that's actually holding it together as the Libertarian Party at large goes through kind of a cataclysmic fallout. But like, even though libertarians are still passionate about their party, Greens are still passionate about their party, they're just not capable of getting on these ballots like before. As Ted mentioned, unprecedented numbers of single names on the ballots because it's just impossible, even for some, in some cases, for even a Democrat to get on the ballot or a Republican to get on the ballot just because they're facing an incumbent and the incumbent during their time decided to make things all the more impossible. I did want to say, like, as part of this, just as information about it, the conventions for the Republicans and Democrats in Texas are taxpayer funded. So when they pay back their convention fees, they're paying back money that already went to the taxpayers. The Libertarians, Greens, and other third parties do not enjoy that. They pay their own money for their own conventions, and they still have to pay that exact – not only do they have to pay a fee or like a proportionate fee, they have to pay the same fee as – and of course, if you're a Republican, you just say, let's have a big convention. It's on the taxpayers' dime. Let's get $50 million here. And if we have to pay $2 million, hey, whatever. We made $48 million on the taxpayers. Yeah. Whereas the Libertarian Party is going, oh, we have to pay $2 million, and we've got to raise that whole thing ourselves. It's absurd to the point of comical levels in Texas with their
parties. Of course, luckily, our conventions aren't expensive like that because we actually are economical. We're spending our own money, so they are pretty economical. But what I was going to say about the voting systems is other countries actually have better voting systems in a lot of cases where they have proportional representation, which is what I favor, where if you get a certain percentage of the vote, you get that many seats. So it should be. So no one is unrepresented. In fact, I just took a vacation in Portugal recently, and they were having an election in Portugal, and they have a parliament with 230 members over there. And there's a classical liberal party, which is a quasi-libertarian party called the, I think, the Liberal Directive Party, I think it's called. And they had, like, I think 12 seats in parliament. Or they had 8 seats, and then they got 12 in the after the election based on their vote totals. And if we had something like that, you know, we'd have like 20-some libertarian congressmen probably if we had something like that, or state legislators, whatever the case. It would probably work better in a state legislature than in Congress. But then the Greens would have representation, libertarians would have representation, and maybe more parties would even form because now they don't because people say, I got to be a Democrat or a Republican. That's where all the action is. But if you know, if you could get elected, then people would say, you know what? Those guys aren't crazy. They actually are serving as legislators. They know what they're doing and they're actually shaking up the system. Let's vote for more of them. And we just have to get that opportunity, and we aren't going to get that unless we can get in there and show people that we're not nuts, that we actually want to change things, and we can change things for the better.
And one final insult to you being economical, Ted, as you've mentioned, they're striking down electronic signatures in Texas as well. So if you want to try to get on the ballot, you need to submit a certain number of signatures. Now, I will say this isn't unique to just third parties, except the problem is if I'm taking taxpayer funds to get to run the rounds, I don't mind collecting 120,000 signatures like I have to do. I don't care if I'm even wasteful when I'm taking forever in getting those signatures. But then you've got the Libertarian Party, which isn't taking those taxpayer funds, has to collect the same number of signatures just to get on the ballot, and they're not allowed to be electronic. You're punishing them. I mean, I can buy a house electronically. What are we doing here when I can't put my name on an initiative electronically?
Or even worse, Hody, when you do succeed in collecting those signatures, all it takes is the duopoly in the state legislature to then say, oh, you were supposed to get 80,000. Let's make it 100,000 next time around, which is that's literally what they did in New York. Every time the Libertarian Party achieved the hurdle, they would have a midnight massacre. It always happens at midnight on the Friday. Let's raise the legislative value, which is literally when I tried to vote for Larry Sharp last time out. He was not on the ballot. I had to write in his name. Mm-hmm. And even then, it took me half an hour because you give them a paper ballot in New York, a handwritten ballot, and it's like they treat it like kryptonite. You know, they got to call a hazmat unit. They put it in a special plastic bag, and they've got a lead-lined box they got to put it in. You know, it's like it really is. And at one point, one of the poll workers just pulled me aside and she goes, son, why don't you just pick a Republican or a Democrat? It's a lot easier.
I
mean, she wasn't a paid operative, but it was just, you know, it's symptomatic of how the system is self-reinforcing. So when libertarians like you, Ted, are knocking on doors and say, hey, listen to what I got to say, and if you agree with me, I'd appreciate your vote or I'd appreciate your signature here, you know. Yeah. And as soon as you do that and you've canvassed and your volunteers have canvassed, the next thing you know, it's, by the way, where's your 50 grand filing fee? You got 2%? Let's make it 5% next time, you know, because it's not an issue for the established duopoly. It's an issue for the libertarians, for the greens, for the socialists, for whoever that want to run their own party. And yes, you know, despite what our former chair said, have a socialist party. If you can't beat a socialist party if you're a libertarian, it's not the socialists' fault.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's your fault. So I think that's sort of where we have to go. And Ted, since we're touching on this and we want to transition a little bit to get your views on what's happening nationally, what do you think of this strategy, which was announced by former Chair McArdle, who is now taking the chair of the Mises Caucus? She announced her intentions, and which was what all of us knew all along, which up until now she kind of quasi-denied and Heist denied and all that, which was their intention was to always sell the ballot access to the Republican Party, basically. And by sell, whether directly or indirectly, their intention was never to run a candidate. It was very open. She admitted to saying it should have been Dave Smith, and we could have traded his ballot access, you know, his 8% of the vote, we could have traded that for Secretary of State or something to that effect, right? Or ambassador somewhere. Without speaking to the ethics of what McArdle may have done personally, what do you make of this so-called kingmaker strategy where it's like, okay, we're going to run as libertarians until the point is, hey, when we see a 48-48 tie between the Republican, we're just going to put a for sale sign, we're going to sell out our principles, and we're going to say, what are you going to give us for our support?
Right. I did not care for that strategy. I did not support her for chair when she ran either time, and I was very disappointed about how she and the National Committee handled the 2024 presidential election. They were pretty much opposed to our candidate Chase Oliver, who's a friend of mine, and I strongly supported him for the nomination. And I think he did a great job as a candidate. I think the a lot of the party activists who claim to be libertarians in a lot of states were voted for Trump I believe they did, and they either because they agreed with Angela McCardle's strategy, or they just didn't like having a gay man as the Libertarian candidate, and because the guy they wanted didn't, well, the guy they really wanted, Dave Smith, didn't run, but then their guy, Michael Rechtenwald, really screwed up at the national convention and didn't really present himself very well, and they even knew it. So,
or since then, by the way, yeah.
Right, right, exactly, exactly. So, I don't agree with that strategy of going in with the Republicans because they don't care about libertarians one whit. I mean, they're going to use us. They're going to say whatever they have to say, like they just do with all the public. They're going to tell us anything, and then they'll just like shuffle us aside like you know, waste paper. Because if we don't serve their needs, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that a big party like that cares one whit about what libertarians think. That's why libertarians have left the Republican Party and the politically homeless there have joined the Libertarian Party or nothing and stopped voting or have nowhere to go and are just totally forlorn because, you know, there's just doesn't seem like any place for people to go. The Republicans do not want us. In fact, here in Texas, when during the testimony on that bill we were talking about the filing fees, Wes Benedict, who's a friend of mine, who's a former LNC national director, testified. He said, "You Republicans, if you don't let us run for office in our party, we're going to join your party and and annoy you considerably." You know, something of that effect. It was very funny right. Because they don't want us. They're not libertarians. They don't believe in freedom. And for us to think that we're going to like magically change their minds and that they're going to suddenly take over libertarian positions. No, they're going to take over libertarian people and neutralize people with libertarian positions so they can just go on their merry way and continue their gravy train at the expense of the taxpayers.
And we literally see it with Rand Paul right now, who's fighting the good fight in the Senate. We saw it with Massey. Like the second they didn't agree with Trump, it was the word went out. We're going to primary you unless you fall in line.
Oh yeah.
So almost at the risk of repeating myself, what do you feel about the prospect of libertarians like Ron Paul in his day, like Rand Paul? Mm-hmm. Thomas Massie saying, "Hey, we're libertarians. You know, we'll caucus with the Freedom Caucus. But maybe the best way to affect this change is to work within the Republican Party to pull them towards liberty. Do you think that's still an effective strategy?"
No. Well, okay. In theory, here and there, you might get like one person or two people that might be able to succeed that way. Justin Amash of Michigan was one of them.
Yes.
He was someone who was quite libertarian, and he actually quit the Republican Party because of Trump and became an independent and then a libertarian, the only actual Libertarian Party member ever to serve in I take that back. Ron Paul was a Libertarian Party member, though he served in Congress as a Republican. He also was a party member. But Justin Amash is pretty much a pure libertarian. And he would have been probably our presidential candidate in 2020 if it hadn't been for COVID screwing up the whole thing. And there just was no good method for campaigning and such that seemed obvious to him at that time. And then he went back to the Republicans to run for Senate in Michigan, and he was roundly defeated because they don't want somebody with his views in the Michigan Republican Party. They want pro-Trump, big government people. To be their candidates. So I don't know what Justin's going to do now, but he was able to do some of that in Congress until he was like disloyal to Trump or voted for impeachment or whatever he did there. And then Thomas Massie purports to be pro-Trump, and so does Rand Paul. So they're not saying, "Oh, we're against Trump," but they just they're policy-wise they are, and they keep getting away with it. It seems like they keep getting reelected and all. So that's some guys can still do it if they're real popular with their constituents, like Ron Paul was when he was a congressman. He wouldn't listen to what the party leader said, but he still kept getting reelected. So if the voters like you, you're going to keep getting reelected, you know.
But to your point, the way Amash went about it, like as popular as he was as a Republican congressman, when he did leave the Republican Party, the voters did not like that. They really abandoned him when he ran as an independent, right, or as a libertarian.
He never ran as a libertarian, though.
As an independent, right? He was an independent.
Or an independent. He just decided not to run for re-election at all. So
I
you're right that if he would have actually been on the ballot as either an independent or a libertarian, he would have been creamed. Yeah.
I thought he actually did run in the primary and just got creamed, but I could be wrong.
That was for senator last year.
Yeah, that's why I got confused. All right, Hody, what else you got for our fine guest, Mr. Ted Brown from Texas? Also, folks out there, I know you're watching, but you're a little quiet tonight. Any questions for Big John, Hody, or Ted Brown? Now's your chance as we get towards the end of our program. Don't forget, you're watching us right here on Facebook, X, Rumble, and YouTube, of course. If you have any questions at all, just put them in your chat. We'll see them here right away. So, Hody, what have you got for Ted?
All right, I got one more here. I'm glad we had the time to get to this because, I, like I said, there was a bunch, and I wasn't sure how we were going to go through these. Thankfully, Ted is very concise.
Yes, he is.
He's
unlike the host.
You and me, yeah.
He's very concise.
Appreciate that. So let me now give a very wordy question, and Ted will answer it very quickly. But, no, we're talking about – I'm going to tie two together here, and that's the abortion – the new abortion bill, Senate Bill 8, and then it's also got tied to it some increases in surveillance, both, of course, touch on libertarian stuff. So so parts of the bill are better-ish regarding abortion because Texas, frankly, your laws killed 3 pregnant women last year. So in recognition of that, they were going to take a step back, although when you read it, it's really questionable how much of a step back this is. So they're no longer going to prosecute women, but they're going to prosecute the doctors who perform abortions. I don't want prosecution of either, but at least not prosecuting women is something. Mm-hmm. But they're like, and they are expanding the areas in which doctors can say it no longer has to be an immediate health emergency to perform the abortion. It just has to be in general a health emergency. Mm-hmm. So they no longer have to wait till the last second and you're actually physically dying to actually intervene.
Right.
So those are two positives from this one. However, in the negatives, they lowered the weeks that you can be pregnant before seeking an abortion down to 6 weeks and under now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know by that point. Women in my life who regularly miss a period for 1 month and all of a sudden you're pregnant for the next one and you can't get it terminated based on how long it even might have been. Not even how long it's been, but if the doctor thinks, I missed one, you just say I missed one period. Mm-hmm. Well, if it theoretically could have been 7 weeks,
yeah,
you can't get the abortion. And then they upped the fines for the doctors, up the penalties for the doctors, the jail times for the doctors who might perform these things. And because you say, well, how are they going to enforce this? Crammed in a whole bunch of massive surveillance. We're talking social media. We're talking monitoring public spaces, all kinds of social stuff into these things to monitor Texans and their day-to-day lives. If they even can potentially have an abortion, which sounds to me just like any woman over the age of like 13, you're just going to start surveilling them because they might be pregnant and then might get an abortion. I mean, it's kind of over the top. I was very excited to be like, oh, good, they're taking a step back. And then I was like, ooh, but we're taking a step in the wrong direction on a lot of civilities. Ted, go ahead.
They're totally creepy. Now I'm a pro-choice libertarian, so I don't favor any of these abortion bans. In Texas, I say it's probably about 50-50. About half the Texas libertarians would be in the pro-life category, and about half are probably in the pro-choice category. Though there's a lot of differences even within those same categories. But true, it's been. I don't think they ever wanted to charge the women with having an abortion. They always want to go after the doctors. And I feel sorry for the doctors in this state. They just don't know what to do. And the goal of this current proposal is to make it clearer for them what they're allowed to do to save a woman who's in distress in her pregnancy. And I just don't think it's going to succeed. I don't think the doctors are still going to be willing to take the chance of fines, jail time, loss of their license. In fact, I bet a lot of people are going to leave the OBGYN specialty of medicine because of this, because you just can't win. unless you set up your practice maybe across the state line in New Mexico or something, you know, the only blue state near us. Same as with where they have abortion clinics and medical marijuana stores and all that over there. But the point is, though, what you mentioned about the surveillance state, that is just insane, where they want to stop women from traveling to have abortions. They want to they also want to ban abortion pills. Luckily, that bill didn't get passed. But they were like probably like open people's mail, too, for that matter, to try to make sure they didn't have abortion pills. And about two-thirds of the abortions now are the pills, because they can just order those from other other states. And they have a law already from the previous session where anyone can, like, sue the doctor or whoever sends or facilitates the abortion. So there was some doctor in New York that was being sued by just some random citizen here in Texas to pay up for, like, sending abortion pills to Texas. And the New York legislature passed the opposite law, saying that they aren't going to listen to any of those laws. They're going to protect their citizens from being charged with or sued under the Texas law, which there's some constitutional questionality in some of that because of, you know, each law respecting the contracts and everything from each state or the laws of each state. But I'm certainly with New York on this one. They need to protect their doctors who should be able to prescribe those pills or send those out to Texas women who want them. I mean, the big thing for libertarians, I think, and the way I look at it is it's health freedom, your choice, your body, your choice about what kind of medical care you need. And I don't want the government getting in between a woman and her doctor for abortion issues, abortion pill issues, anything like that. And it is a massive surveillance state. It's like the Republicans are about as big government as they could possibly get on this particular issue. And then legally, they're on really crazy ground when they start saying, oh, any citizen can sue somebody for facilitating an abortion. And it's pointed out to them, well, if the Democrats got in, they could do the same for anybody that facilitates a gun sale or something. You know, it's like any law that you pass against your enemies there is going to be used against you eventually. They just don't recognize that crazy citizen lawsuit thing is ridiculous and a legal travesty, really.
It is, and I keep Hody and I will always laugh about this, the political short-sightedness of any politician to think that politics will end as soon as they get out of office. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, to your point, like, okay, if you think that it's okay to sue over abortion doctors, you know, a Texan to privately sue a New York doctor for a third-party abortion, to your point, what happens when all those guns in Chicago go off and all those kids get killed in Chicago? Do they get to sue? I'm assuming Texas has gun manufacturers at some point. It's just an assumption I'm making. I don't know if Smith and Wesson is actually in Texas or not, but having my stereotype of Texas in place, I'll venture a guess that there might be some gun manufacturers in Texas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. The short-sightedness of it all is just incredible. And you know, for those that are even pro-life libertarians, which I consider myself one of those, I think you have to recognize that abortion is one of the most unsolvable political issues we have, because I think you can make a cogent argument for both sides of that. But I think what's important is that on both sides, at least the way I view it, I've never advocated for criminalization of anybody's actions under that. I think it's a cultural battle that needs to be fought, not a political or criminal one. You know, so even if I disagree with the position that abortion, you know, being pro-abortion, pro-choice, I may disagree with that, but in nowhere in my wildest imagination am I like, well, part of my plank is that if a woman gets an abortion, she should be sent to jail or fined, or if a healthcare provider is providing those services, that he or she should be jailed or run out of practice or whatever.
Right.
It just seems to me that that's literally something that will never be solved. It always seems to be a 50-50 split, no matter what age you're in. Mm-hmm. And why are you criminalizing half the population? And I think that's, you know, that's a silly tack to take. It's a silly strategy, but
exactly. Well, abortion wasn't even an issue until, of course, Roe v. Wade, and that actually created the entire modern right-wing religious conservative movement and the shift of the Republican Party,
right,
taking over all the southern states and from the Democrats and all. I mean, that was it. That was like the issue that they were so concerned about, and you know, obviously that's a legitimate issue to be concerned about. But that created an entire political movement and upended politics, and they just kept losing. The Republicans kept getting contributions and support on that issue for like 40 some years, and they never delivered. They kept saying, "Oh, we're going to deliver," and then when they did, it was like the dog chasing after the car and actually catching it. Because then what are they going to do? Are they actually going to implement those kind of laws? And, yep, they sure did. And the rest of the population that wasn't paying that close of attention is very upset with them. So there's a lot. That's why there's a bigger gender gap than ever in the politics.
Hmm. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think of it directly that way, but it makes sense. I think a lot of people have pointed that. Hody, you've been sitting there quietly. Anything to put a bow on this subject?
Yeah, I mean, I guess since we're talking about it, I don't want to share too much, but I have I have personal history with this. I used to work at Aurora South Hospital. We performed abortions there. I did IVs and EKGs. I stopped about a year or two before, like, the vacuum was introduced. Hmm. So, unfortunately, I have seen the worst sides of abortion, right? Hmm. Like, I saw mistakes, right? And that's one of those things that when there's a mistake, the whole room's in therapy, right? Like, I mean, it's an awful, tough thing. I feel for my pro-life, like, libertarians. And I guess I want to say principally, Big John, you and I are the same, even though I just call myself pro-choice because I understand that people tend to mean politically.
Right.
But as far as the culture of life goes, 100%, absolutely. But I also want to say during my time there, because I think people would say, what can we do to prevent this? Because, I mean, people were eating certain plants on the Trail of Tears or, you know, putting them in their bodies that would induce a miscarriage or abortion, right? Like, this is not like modern tech, right? This isn't like a, you know, like modern tech just makes it a lot safer, cleaner, more effective than coat hangers and plants, right? Like,
sure.
I mean, you know, so this is just a matter of technology. The cat's out of the bag now. We're not putting it back in. If we want that pro-life side, I will say this. Having witnessed hundreds of them, literally hundreds of them, I cannot recall a time when the mother didn't feel that she had an alternative at home, that she felt loved for her decision. I don't recall the fathers being in the picture. I don't recall – I mean, outside of – life-saving procedure ones, which I will admit to the pro-lifer's point is a little on the low side, right? Like, you know, but I mean, as far as like elective voluntary abortions, we can call them voluntary if we want, but a society without coercion, even if it's not a political gun to your head, is still a society with coercion. And if you don't feel you can go home, like, and you're scared of what your ultra-religious parents or grandparents are going to do to you,
yeah,
what's going to happen to you if you're going to live life on the street? I'm telling you, if you want to prevent abortions, you take all the money we've spent trying to overturn Roe v. Wade and turn that into a support systems for parents, and you would have saved infinitely more lives. I mean, exponentially.
Yeah.
I can't – immeasurably more lives. I'm telling you that they were looking for ways they could have these children that would make it so that they weren't going to get kicked out of their house or you know, possibly – I mean, violence done to them. Creating, if you went pro-life, John, you hit the nail, I mean, right on the head with this one. You said cultural. Yes, that's where it starts. Make it so your kids know they can say, "Dad, I got pregnant. I wasn't ready. I don't know what to do. I'm scared." And be the dad that says, "Sure, I can help." Be the friend that can help. Be the brother that can help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
And then sisters, women, of course, to each other. Be the person who's there who says, "Yes, I will provide help. If you are scared, I'll give you a place to sleep. I'll give you a place to eat. You'll be okay. We'll get through this together." And don't judge. Don't condemn. I mean, these sound – they're not satisfying because they're not political answers. But politics is downstream from culture. You fix this politically, you fix this problem culturally, ceases to be an issue politically. And it's not something we have to have these debates on going forward. So thank you for letting me say a lot there. I have even more just based on personal experience, but it is a lot. It was eye opening.
And I think that's the point, right? I think the point is that for some issues, and to me, I'll still maintain, out of all the issues I've ever put my pea brain to work on, this is the one that I find no good answer to, because right. I no matter which position I try to take, you know, I'll in my own mind, I'll take both sides of an issue and see which one makes more sense to me. And this one, there are, of course, the outrageous cases where you say, well, somebody's just doing this as a form of contraception, right? And they'll have, you know, you ask them, I've had one every summer, you know, and
yeah.
Okay, that's still a cultural issue, my point, and that certainly doesn't help the issue, because now you're introducing this bias of a particular caricature that you know, destroys one side of the argument at least. But I'm saying, like, to your point, Hody, the most cases where it is a heart-wrenching decision one way or another, right? Or and to criminalize it, to me, is the ultimate sin. It's like, why are you criminalizing it? It's, you know, stop it. Don't criminalize it. Offer your help. Offer this, you know, and the hack position of, well, for all those Christians or whatever who are saying, not God's will, you're doing this, is like, where was your lending hand? Did you offer to take that pregnant woman in and help her through her pregnancy? Did you offer to adopt that baby? Look in the mirror. When you start judging others, look in the mirror. How are you helping the situation? So that's what I meant by, I think it's irreconcilable. The only thing that'll solve it is if science ever, beyond the shadow of a doubt, can identify the point at which a fetus becomes an individual, at which point they acquire the rights all of us have. Like, unless that is definitively proven, it begins at bang, this moment. Here's a blood test. This is what, and I'll use the word soul, not in a religious sense, but just to shorten the language.
Yeah.
Once you decide when the soul is, the light switch goes on, which we'll never get to that point. But if we did, that would be the only thing that would solve this issue, right? Because right. To your point, yeah, that's right. That's my opinion, yeah.
Right, because you know that if the, you know, there are premature babies, and if they're delivered real early, you know, like in the 26 or 28 weeks or something, you know, as soon as they're slapped on the behind there, they certainly, you know, they're all there as long as they can survive the medical situation, and a lot of them can now. So it's somewhere in the 20s on the weeks where the kid can survive outside the womb. So obviously that's a good cutoff point, but you're right. We don't know exactly when it is, but it's a little bit more now with science. It's a little bit more precise where you can tell that sort of thing. But again, most abortions are in the first trimester, you know, or certainly in the first, you know, they'd say like 15 weeks would be like a cutoff point that like almost a large majority of Americans would agree with, would be a time. Like if you can go up to 15 weeks, that would be fair. Something like that. But after that, maybe not. But then that's like 99% of the abortions are before 15 weeks. So you're going to cover just about every situation. But you still want to have the opportunity, say, if someone's having a distress in their pregnancy and they still want to have – there are even people that want to have their kids, but they just are having medical problems. They need to be able to take care of that.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's where we have to be, like, compassionate in that regard and just recognize the reality of it. It's not like kids are being aborted at, you know, when they could be delivered at, you know, 35 weeks or something. I just don't see that even happening. I mean, like I always said about some other subject here, somewhere, sometime that might have happened, like
right.
Here and there. But that's not something that happens generally, and you can't be passing laws assuming that that's what's going on. You have to, you know, that's way the exception and not the rule.
Yeah, well, you know, what do lawyers say? Tough cases make for bad laws, right? So
they do.
So you can't always go that. Listen, I didn't mean to drag this down into such a deep and heavy level at the end of the show, but I'm glad we had some substantive talk about that. All right. Everyone out there, you've been watching Free For All right here on Grumblings Media. And first of all, a lot of thanks to our guest, Mr. Ted Brown. 2024 LP candidate for U.S. Senate from the great state of Texas came on to help us understand a little bit about what's going on the legislative hijinks taking place in Texas right now. So, Ted, but listen, before we sign off, please give people any sort of promo you want, your X handle, your website, whatever you'd like.
Oh, sure, because it's very possible I'll run again for the Senate next year. We'll see. I haven't made a decision on that yet. But, yeah, my website is tedbrown.org, and you can follow me on X Twitter, at Ted Brown Liberty. And so take a look. I repost a lot of good articles supporting freedom and other related subjects. And my website has a lot of good libertarian positions on there. So I do appreciate you gentlemen having me on. It's always great to talk about liberty.
Absolutely. And we thank you for joining us tonight. Hoedster, anything you want to end the night on?
Ted, pleasure talking to you, man. I really appreciate it. You're a great interview. We got to get your face out there. There's a lot of people representing the liberty movement. I won't name them, but I will just say I prefer Ted Brown to them.
Yes. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. And Ted, you seem to have a nice, like, sort of FM DJ voice. Any radio work in your past?
No. Nothing like that. I'm in the insurance business, so no radio work.
Very, very reassuring voice then for selling insurance policies, life insurance policies. All right, everyone. Until next week when we'll have another guest as interesting as Mr. Brown on. This has been Big John for myself and the Hoedster over there. Catch you all.